You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
I received a piece of work from Dr. Adrian Saville, who's the Chief Executive of Canon Asset Managers. And the headline of this piece was, Where the Puck? The Three Drivers Shaping Markets. And I have to read you the first paragraph in order for you to understand the puck reference, because it says the following. History is one of the investor's greatest teachers, offering rich lessons and valuable guiding principles. But this aspect of investing is very much a level playing field. The past is open access, Adrian says. The distinction of the skilled investor lies in the discipline of applying the lessons and principles from history to the future. As Wayne Gretzky, widely regarded as the greatest ice hockey player ever, there's the puck thing, eloquently puts it, I skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it has been. And I would embellish that by saying there's nothing new in this world, only the history we don't know, Adrian.
And, you know, to extend on that, thinking about where a puck is going to be is not so much forecasting where you're going to be exactly wrong in almost any forecast you make, but rather being approximately right. And here, history can be a very powerful educator and guide, and that we can learn from that history about what I would term structural forces. And those structures are things that you can use to approximate direction of travel or state of play, to stay with the ice hockey analogy, and from those structures make some reasonably confident suggestions about what a future will look like in 5 or 10 years' time and invest for that.
We'll come to that in a moment. But obviously, we're in a very expansive and creative mood when you wrote this piece, because you say the following. Albert Einstein died and met three people outside the pearly gates. To pass the time, he asked each of them their IQs, their intelligence quotients. The first replied 190, and they discussed atomic physics. The second answered 150, and they debated nuclear-free legislation. The third mumbled 50. After pausing, Einstein asked, so what is your forecast for the budget deficit next year? Which is sort of self-deprecating in a way, because you are an economist yourself.
Well, Lindsay, I am. And I'm not trying to be too clever by half or even funny. I think that that's actually a very serious joke, is economists spend a vast amount of time getting down to very exact forecasts that seldom, if ever, materialize. I think you run a very high risk if you take investment positions or allocate capital on the back of exact forecasts. So forecasting is not an industry that has showered itself in any type of glory. So I'm not I'm not trying to be sort of funny or perverse. I'm actually quite serious in that joke.
Yes.
Let's stop forecasting and let's think about structures. And the structures are less exact, but that inexactness translates into a reality where you're likely to be approximately right rather than exactly wrong.
Yeah, let's go to the three drivers shaping markets now, because they are quite profound. And if I can understand, the three drivers that you talk about are all to do with demographics in a way, and future demographics. You say, number one, fewer babies. Number two, more people. Number three, smarter machines. Now, if we all live to the age of 560 instead of 92, which is apparently what is going to be in 10 years' time for healthy people anyway, if you could live for hundreds of years, then you would be sitting down now with your team and saying, never mind what the Woolworths trading update is. We've got to look to what the Woolworths market is going to be in 200 years' time for our 300-year-old investors. I mean, it's as simple as that.
I love the way you put that. And I think that that's one angle on it, is the longer you live, the bigger your financial problem, the longer your investment mandate, which would delight anyone who's serious about long-term investing, because time then becomes not the enemy but the friend. But another angle on this is, the longer people live, but mathematically, the bigger your population gets, as long as you're at least having a replacement ratio, not fewer babies. But if people are living longer, then you've got more hearts and heads on the planet, your populations will continue to grow. And so that's one aspect of longevity. The other aspect, as you point out, is about investing for longer time horizons. A third aspect of longevity is that, unfortunately, with longevity comes frailty and greater need for healthcare. So we're thinking about investing from all of those angles or aspects.
So you're putting those principles into place now, despite the fact that by the time most of these trends become embellished and come to fruition, you will probably not be in the industry and probably won't be on this earth.
Well, I mean, I don't really like that forecast, Lindsay.
Well, you're immortal, like most of us.
you're absolutely right. So, those numbers, if we get exaggerated or extreme and we start talking about 200-year lifespans, that's wild-eyed. I'm not sure that that's a reality just yet. You might have a person who could get to that age. But certainly, based on current demographics and trends in healthcare, science, technology, it's quite reasonable to expect today's teenagers to achieve an average life expectancy of 100 years.
Yes.
You have to start shifting your investment behavior for that reality. If you don't do it now, you can't buy the time back, when you're 82 and start investing for another 18 years. It's too late. You've got to change those investment behaviors and patterns now, when the time is a factor that's in your favor, not a factor that's weighing against you.
Let's have a look at the third point, smarter machines. You say a third immutable force is the rise of machines, and specifically intelligent machines. Since 1960, you go on to say, computing power has on average doubled every 18 months. Now, I've looked at statistics that show how many people were employed in the agricultural sector of European economies in, say, 1900. And it was a massive, massive percentage. I mean, I think it was something absurd, like 60, 70%. You go to Italy now, and it's down to 7 or 8%. So things do change. And this was 120, 130 years ago, which is a relatively short span. So once the robots start, and I can remember robots starting to build a car called the Fiat Strada when I first started driving, because my father had one. And I looked at this and I thought, this is amazing. This car has been built by a robot, obviously replacing jobs. And that was, what am I now? I can't tell you how old I am now, but it was a few decades ago. It was 30 decades ago that this happened. And the advances since then have been extraordinary, and the advances will not stop. In fact, they'll become more and more frequent. In other words, the time span of advancements will be compressed even more dramatically.
This is exactly the point, is these advances in technology, or more specifically the advances in processing capacity and capability, are exponential. That's Moore's law. And Moore's law is not so much a forecast that we will continue to double in processing power, but we're on this exponential, and it seems a reasonable assumption to make that this processing capacity will continue to grow. That puts us in shape for what is called the singularity. And the singularity is when machines achieve the processing power of humans. Based on this exponential, that singularity could happen as soon as 2025, where you've got machines doing the decision-making, processing capabilities of people. Now, that then very often strikes an incredible fear that, well, then the machines are coming for our jobs and robots are going to rule the world. And the point that I'm at pains to make in this note that you're referencing is it's not machines or people, it's machines and people, or people and machines. Now, by way of example, Boston Dynamics builds robots. And one of these robots is called Atlas. Atlas can go into a burning building, which a fire person cannot go into, and bring out a child that's trapped in a burning building. That's a robot and a machine. Right now, I've got a machine embedded in me. I've got a sensor under my skin because I'm a type 1 diabetic.
Yeah.
That sensor sends information to my smartphone every 5 minutes, and I've got real-time tracking of my glucose level. In the absence of that, my glucose control is more erratic, it's less robust, and my health is worse or more vulnerable. So if we put it in the context of machines will take some jobs. Machines will, have got into the business of writing articles, of taking investment decisions, of scanning non-disclosure agreements and replacing lawyers. That's an inevitable, or that's a continuous march. And we'll stay on that track. It's nothing new, and there's nothing to be shocked about it. So our investment appetite here is to figure out how we invest for the circumstance of people and machines.
Yeah, I suppose there's a joke there about the lawyers. What do you call 100 lawyers replaced by robots? Answer is a very good start.
But I think you might have just lost some listeners.
Please. Anyway, let's talk about this. Your final paragraph is as follows. Investing on the back of forecasts might feel exact, but it is more likely to be folly. Investing on the back of structural drivers will feel inexact and sometimes fuzzy, but being approximately right is a far more powerful force in driving successful investment decisions than being exactly wrong. So then how, put all this together, especially that last paragraph, given what you've just said, how do you then invest in this world, you say, where the puck could leap to a completely different plane? You can't do it. What you're doing is exactly what you said we shouldn't be doing. In other words, forecasting. We just got to take it as it comes.
Well, no, I would disagree with that. This is what I would call a forecast is, suggesting that economic growth next year will be 2.7% or inflation is going to be 5.3% and earnings are going to be 57 cents a share in 5 years' time.
Yes. So
that's what I would call the industry of forecasting. And my argument is that if you're building an investment case on the back of that, you're likely to be disappointed that the world won't quite deliver on that expectation. By contrast, following the puck is about a broad direction of travel. And if we're building this on the back of structures, so the references that we've made are to population growth, where the world is now at replacement ratio. So you're having fewer babies, rising advances in medicine, science, technology, which builds life expectancy. This is a well-established pattern, and to make this as a suggestion about what the future looks like, we could call that a forecast. I'm going to call it a structural driver. And to point to machines growing in capacity and capability, small machines that are smarter, that too is a forecast, but based on structure, I'm not talking about the exact processing power or the number of machines or what it will mean for Intel's earnings, but rather positioning ourselves for a world with more and smarter machines.
It's a fascinating subject, which we have to expand upon in the new year. But Adrian, for now, thank you very much for your time. That's Dr. Adrian Saville, who is the CEO of Canon Asset Managers. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.